You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Great Scott!
I got a bad feeling about this.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. You, me, or nobody is gonna hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Yes,
it's your time. Now go out there and take it.
Han Solo, I've been waiting for this day for a long time.
Can't wait. Let's get it.
This is the Bart and Han Show on 98.7 ESPN.
It's 11 o'clock in the greatest city in the world. Alan Han, Bart Scott. Bart, what's the number?
1-800-919-3776. Get on the lines early and often. Kershaw changing the narrative.
Oh, we going buffet? Oh, the bell is ringing. Buffet, get in line. Again, 800-919-3776. And what about the social media stuff?
If you can't get us on the lines because they just packed up, then you can go ahead and catch us on the Bart and Han on the tweet. If you can't get us on the tweet, DM Allen exclusively.
Don't DM me.
Your navel pics at Bart and Han. And then if you can't get us there, Bill, tell them where they find us at, man.
Snapface, Instant Chat, or whatever.
Anywhere.
And listen, the Snapchat interface is going to be available on the new iPhone 12. I heard it. Specifically, yes. Just for our show.
Yes. Those the apps for sure. You worked this morning. A little KJZ action, you and Keyshawn.
Yeah, I got no life.
You guys had Zubin, like, on his toes.
I understand now why Zubin.
And by the way, there was some sniper fire going on there, too.
Yeah. I think
you're calling out the Dallas Cowboys. You said they're soft. Teams you played against, he said Dallas has always been soft.
They're front runners. What happens is they get credit and they get credibility and they get fame for being an average organization over the last 25 years, but because they have that star, it carries power. And it's like almost like
their
Dallas.
Brand.
Yeah, it's like Dallas and that brand is its own country. Right, so as long as they're in Texas, they think that everybody respects them because they get patted on the back. They, you know, I'm sure they get tables, get drinks sent to them. But outside of that, we look at them like a joke because every year we have the same discussion. This is the year for the Cowboys. This is the year for the Cowboys.
Let me ask you this: the Cowboys are the richest franchise in U.S. in U.S. sports.
Yep.
Right. The Yankees are there with them as well. The Lakers, but the Knicks are there with them as well. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say the Cowboys are closer to the Knicks than they are the Yankees?
I absolutely would say that. I mean, come on. They only
How much closer? Like, would you say if the Knicks and the Yankees were 10, what number would the Cowboys be?
So, I mean, 50 would be in the middle, right? So, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, 5 would be the middle.
Yeah, that's right. What I'm saying. But if I'm using percent.
Yeah.
So, 50, you know, 5 would be in the middle. I would say they're like 3.5. They're 3.5. Like, you can't count on them. You can't depend on them. Like, no matter who the hell quarterback is, you can look at the Steelers and say, yo, Steelers got a chance. Like, yeah, Ben's hurt. No matter. They still could get to the playoffs. In a tougher division.
Well, I'll tell you what. There's something going on with their coach that we'll talk about. That actually relates to the Jets. Yep. We'll get to that in a little bit. Again, the call's 800-919-3776. But last night, Dodgers get the win in Game 1 of the World Series, 8-3. And it's amazing to think as you're watching this game and Clayton Kershaw did give up a home run, but didn't have to get in his car and chase it down. So that's good news at the commercial. But what you saw was Mookie Betts. And you see Mookie Betts not just hit a home run, stealing two bases, just he's the action. I mean, he was everything. 2-for-4, had the home run, like I said, but just he provided all the action. And it's what they say. This is why the Dodgers traded for him.
Yep.
He's that type of player. He has an impact on the game, and it's beyond what a pitcher can do.
Right.
A guy like Kershaw obviously pitched, and for him, especially in a big spot, he pitched out of his mind. And Glasnow did not pitch well. So Kershaw pitched great, but Betts is the story. And Bart, it makes you go now to the Steve Cohen stuff, which we continue to be reminded of, as now the owner's committee has approved the ownership change to him. They still have to get all of the owners to vote and make it official. But, I mean, it was as close to official as you possibly can. And as you're watching this and you see that the Dodgers were like, oh, you want us to take David Price too? Yeah, okay, sure, whatever. Whatever it takes to get this guy, we need this guy. We need Mookie Betts. So they took on the David Price contract. He ain't even playing for them. He opted out. Did you even notice that? Has anybody said, oh my God, if only the Dodgers had David Price?
And imagine if David Price was pitching against Snell. Like, at least you have somebody that you know. And it's crazy that they were willing to take that and take that bad contract because he hadn't performed in Boston and had wore out his welcome, but they was willing to eat that. And that's what I'm saying. And what did we eat? We ate the Robinson Cano deal, you know, so that we can get Edwin Diaz. And how's that work?
But think about it. So when the Red Sox, which is the other thing, like, it's amazing to think that they were like, yeah, we're just going to move on from Mookie Betts. Like, it's just incredible that they would do that.
But when they made him available,
the Mets were involved. You know, the Mets wanted to make the deal. At least they tried to make the deal. But, you know, what they offered was like a Brandon Nimmo, J.D. Davis type, you know, a top prospect. And then on top of it, because they didn't want to take on his salary, remember, he also wanted the extension that the Dodgers gladly gave him.
Right.
The Mets were like, you might have to take like Cespedes and Jed Lowry off our hands because that's a big, you know, we don't want that. And the Red Sox are like, no, we're not doing that.
We ain't
like,
taking
not
even nothing. We're giving you a player.
Exactly.
Maybe
we're giving
a
top superstar. Right. This guy will be in your franchise for the next 8 years. He'll be in the Hall of Fame, and maybe he'll put our cap on, but maybe he'll put your cap on. You have no idea. Like, he will be a legend in New York if you just make this trade. And the Wilpons were like, nah, you're going to have to take Cespedes. And the Dodgers are like, we're not going to have to give you anything. But if you need us to take David Price, we'll do it because it's worth it to us. And this is where, again, you bring it back to this. That can never happen again in Mets history. That can never happen again. A guy like that does not. That's a Halley's Comet. Players like that in baseball never become available like that to you until they hit the market at free agency, and then you're going to pay a boatload for a player. But if you can get a guy like that and get him under control, get him under contract,
get him in your building,
100% you do it. And they didn't because we all know the old refrain, the Wilpons are cheap. They didn't want to do it.
ATM, right? They didn't
That can't ever happen again. And Steve Cohen is supposed to be the answer to all those problems. He's supposed to make sure that never happens again for the Mets. But that's it's just watching that game.
It's depressing,
it's one
right?
more reminder of what the Mets have been with the Wilpons. You could have had that player. You could have. And you went cheap
if they didn't get him. If they could have got the deal done earlier, it would have been a chance. If they could have got the deal done, if they could have, you know, didn't have the hiccup as pulling the offer off the table, they could have had the opportunity to get it done because they knew they would have been able to go to the vault and not the ATM. And now, you know, we have to watch once again as a reminder, you know, that this is what happens and this is what it should have, could have country. Now we got it going on. Like, it's like New York fans live Groundhog's Day every day. Because, okay, we're dealing with this right now. We're dealing with the reports of Chris Paul saying he wants to go to L.A.
Well, we'll get to that in noon.
So
NBA
it's just a continual cycle. And who's going to break that cycle? It's going to have to be a guy like Cohen because you know that the Mets doesn't have the same narrative of the Knicks. The Knicks got the money. They'll spend the money. But people won't come. The Mets had people willing to come, but they ain't had the money.
Yeah.
So like maybe they got the money, they'll get people to come and they'll be able to get players here because the New York market is a beautiful market to be in. But also,
is it though?
If you can
handle everything that comes with it. But that's why you trade.
You think
that's
Gerrit Cole ain't happy?
If you could trade for a player, that's what you do. You have to. If you're a franchise like the Mets and they just didn't do it. And again, we're not going to harp on what they didn't do because we know why. All right. It's now that Cohen is there. And I found this also to be interesting, Bart. Do you read into it at all that on the Major League Baseball's ownership committee that voted to approve him as the next owner, of the 8 votes, he got 7, meaning it wasn't unanimous. Is there anything to be concerned of about that? That one owner on that committee said no to Steve Cohen. And we know he had a bit of a reputation. You know, there's a little concern about that from some owners. But why, if you're an owner in Major League Baseball, would you not welcome in a guy that's worth $15 billion?
That's why.
That will now inject life into a major market team for you.
That's why. Because
you don't want competition?
That's competition. That's an unfair advantage for them, right? That's an unfair advantage. It's like one team being able to have 10 practices and you able to have 5. Because he can double you up and he can compete for every free agent that you want. And he can overpay. People don't like that. People, listen, we experience this on a different level, right? Our friends are our friends, but as soon as we decide to ascend and try and create distance between us, that's when the relationship gets all choppy, right? That's when things get weird, right? But as long as you kind of on the same level,
you're getting all big. It's all good for me.
So now you're thinking like, okay, these billionaires all feel good about themselves. They all relatively worth around the same thing. Then you bring a multi-billionaire, and it's like create separation, and you start feeling bad about yourself. You know, you thought you was a baller, but now he's, you know, it's like Biggie. Thought he worked his until I handled my biz. You know what I mean? And what's happening is, you know, they don't want somebody to come in that can compete and force them to have to spend more money because it hurts their bottom line more than it will hurt his bottom line because he has the money to burn.
Now, the next up is you have now the full ownership group that now has to vote, right? And you basically need 23 out of 30 to approve the ownership. Now, I told you, 7 of the 8 on the ownership committee did approve. There's also, by the way, an 8-owner executive committee. I mean, this is like layers upon layers to get this done.
It's just like picking the next pope. Are they going to burn some white smoke? We were looking for the white smoke.
I mean, if you're a Mets fan, how excruciating has this been for you? Is waiting for this to become officially official? Ownership committee, all right, 7 out of 8. So one guy said no. Now you have 8 owner committee for the executive committee that have to approve. Is it a different 8 people now? So that's what makes it strange. So you have 8. Now you have another 8, and then you have the full ownership group. So technically, if it's 8 different people, that's 16 of the 30 owners have already voted. They're going to vote again, and they've got to get 23 out of 30. Now, technically, because the Mets are the Mets going to put in a vote on this thing?
No.
So it's 22 out of 29.
Right. They're going to vote no.
But it's just amazing to me of the different layers here. But once they finally get through all that, and I mean, what's taken so long? Okay, this group voted today. Can tomorrow somebody else vote, or do we have to wait a week for this? You don't need to be together. Just put your vote in. Let's go. Let's move this thing along. Because there's business to get to once the World Series is over. And I think that business, as we know, Sandy Alderson is already coming in as his president. He's bringing him in as right-hand man. We've already seen reports that he's going to revamp the analytics department, or I should say maybe instead of revamp, he's going to vamp it because there is no analytics department. It's a guy with a Commodore 64, apparently. So they're going to put he's going to invest a lot into the analytics department, which you should do. But then what? Who's the GM going to be? I find that to me, Sandy's not going to be the GM. You need to bring in somebody that, again, I've always said this. There is no salary cap, and there should be no budget on the infrastructure of your franchise.
So you're saying go to Cleveland? You're saying go to Cleveland, go get him?
Cleveland. Are you talking about Chernoff?
Yeah, Chernoff's son.
And Chernoff could be the guy. It's a local guy, obviously, and he grew up there. I was thinking Stearns. Stearns is a New York guy or kid. He's 35. Young, brilliant, went to Harvard. He's got to be smart.
Oh, analytics.
Mets. I mean, he grew up a Met fan. He was, he interned under Minaya, didn't he?
Bring him back home.
Is somebody that's got, I'm all about blood in the ground. You know that. I bring that up all the time. David Stearns would sort of be, like, did he orchestrate the Yelich deal? He had to have, right? That only happened, 2 years ago. He had to have been, his hands were all over that. And I just feel like this. If the Brewers are like, no, all right, what's it going to cost? Like, I want the best and the brightest, and I have a blank check. I will bring you in here, and I will pay whatever it takes to get the best. Who is the best? And if you tell me, well, they should go after Brian Cashman. No. The Mets shouldn't do that for one reason, because it's the old Met way of chasing after whatever the Yankees are doing. That's out. Like, I wouldn't do that. I would get a guy with blood in the ground. And David Stearns has blood in the ground. I mean, I know Chernoff is a local guy, and obviously his connection. But I feel like Stearns would be a guy that would catch your attention, wouldn't he?
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
35, young and bright, done a great job in Milwaukee with not a huge budget. And
You want somebody that's going to be around for a while. You want somebody that can make some decisions, that's going to be around, that's still close enough to the transition of where the game is going with the analytics and being able to build a team and a squad. Listen, we saw that
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
I got names like just popping in my head as I'm thinking about different. And I got another crazy one for you. You got to finish your thought.
No. I'm with you. You want somebody that can take the organization to the next level, but be a bridge from the old to the new school. You don't want to go somebody that's strictly analytics, but you want somebody.
Yeah, right. Sandy's more of the old school. He's more of he's going to be more of the guy that kind of gets everything organized properly, so probably do some of the things he wanted to do and
from
couldn't.
The gut. He can go from the gut, too. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to have an element of gut, but you want to have an element of, okay, this is a new way to look at things, because when you look at what Tampa's doing, it's amazing. I think if they win, what's at stake for this World Series is the fact that fracking will take place. The fact that that people will start saying, let's try and build our championship that way. That's the way to do it. The Dodgers represent the old school. You just said it. Give me David Price. We don't care how much it costs. We'll spend. But they've been in
Dodgers
Series.
The Dodgers are all in on analytics. No one does more than they do.
But they're both, though. Right? They're both.
Well, the way they won yesterday's game. How about the way they won yesterday's game? Did we see a million home runs? It was all like get on base,
how
about stealing bases, double steal. Like it was. I wouldn't call it small ball. I'd call it baseball.
Yeah, because you know
the Dodgers. You weren't here yesterday, but I was dumping all over baseball.
Yep.
I was, because it's not the game I grew up with, and I have a hard time with it sometimes. I don't find the Rays all that compelling, even though everybody's trying to tell me about Rosarena and everybody else, and how do you not get compelled by this team? I don't, mainly because they're not likable. Blake Snell is a punchable face. I think Glasnow's fun to watch as a pitcher, but, it's a pitcher.
He reminds me of Syndergaard, man.
Who does?
Glasnow? Because he's just a hard pitcher, man. He needs to get a third pitch, just like Syndergaard.
Oh, I see. You mean style-wise.
Yeah, style-wise. The way they go about approaching, like, throwing the ball. Were you thinking Morton more like a DeGrom, like a guy that's more of a thinker? You know what I mean? A lot of movement, a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think
Morton's going to be an X factor in this series.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
he's going to be an X factor.
But that's a compelling story, right? Because I feel like people will start saying, you know what, we need to be more aware and in tune about who we're signing, not just the name that we're signing. That's what the Rays represent. The very few markets can do what the Dodgers can do. Be all in on analytics, but being all in on spending as well because of the budget they have. Could you imagine their local radio deal and TV deal that they have? They have money to burn. They're probably printing money. And they've been in this window for like 4 or 5 years now.
Who's printing money?
The Dodgers.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is they can be all in on both sides, right? They're kind of
They've
like,
always been. No, but that's the thing. The Dodgers and the Yankees have been those big spending teams, and the Dodgers have been on knocking on the door.
They've
been winning divisions left and right. I believe it's 8 years they've won a division. Like this is the year for them to get it done. There's no question. But I just felt the game yesterday was more entertaining because of the fact that there was activity and action on the base paths.
Right.
And yet you still also got good pitching. It's not like you had terrible pitching.
Yeah.
Glasnow struggled a bit. But anyways, I felt like that. So they are hot. They are deep into analytics. But yet we did see some gut stuff. And we'll talk about that when we do Blitzer Prevent, because I do see there's a difference in baseball when it comes to regular season and playoffs that I really want the Yankees to pay attention to, because you're seeing it front and center right now. But again, the real question was about the Mets, because I can't help but watch Mookie Betts and think to myself, now, I'm a New York guy. Like, I'm a Yankees fan, but I'm all about New York. It's good for our business when the teams are good. When the teams suck, you might think, oh, it's good because it gives you guys something to rant about. It's not true. People are letting go. You let go of the rope when your team sucks for as long as some of these teams have sucked here in New York. You want them to see good. So there's Mookie Betts. He could be a star here in New York. He wasn't, and now he's in the World Series for the Dodgers. And I just kept saying to myself, man, Steve Cohen comes in here, that can never happen again. Never, ever be outbid by anyone else, especially because you got cheap and demanded that the team looking to dump a salary that didn't want to pay someone, you're like, yeah, gonna need you to take this contract, though. I mean, they must have been like, are you out of your mind?
Like,
why would we take Cespedes from you, dummy? Like, that's just a die. It's just mind-boggling. So, Cohen eventually is going to get, unless Jerry Reinsdorf gets what he wants and blocks him, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Let's go A-Rod.
But if you, maybe that's what they're trying to do. But if you have Cohen in place, you get Alderson in place, you already know he's going to be there. The GM is going to be your next significant, most important hire. Who should it be? I'm feeling like David Stearns is the guy. You got a young guy with blood in the ground, and you got a guy that's had some success. He's smart. He's from New York. He was an intern here with the Mets. He wanted to continue to grow. They let him go, and he's become a bit of a superstar now in Milwaukee. Who else could be out there? You want a wild card name?
Yes.
Jeff Luhnow. Mm. You know, A-Rod talked to him.
So A-Rod, he was his general manager. But
A-Rod, like, I don't know if he was he said he was talking to him for advice, but you know, and Cohen is the, you know, I don't think Cohen would go that direction mainly because of the A-Rod, there's that A-Rod connection. But the funny thing is because Cohen is a bit of like, I don't see him as that guy that's going to like stay inside the lines. Like, I'm going to do whatever I need to do. I'm going to pay whatever I need to pay. I'm not worried about everybody. I don't care what you think of me. Like, I could see him being like that because a lot of people say in his business, that's how he's been. But that would be like doing something like that. You want to piss everybody off?
Yeah.
That's one way to do it. And but the Luhnow connection to A-Rod might have hurt him in the long run, but yeah, we'll see. But we just heard him. He's been chirping now that the World Series are going on, saying that he had nothing to do with it. But there's a lot of options out there, but we'll see what happens. But all I know is that watching that World Series last night and watching Mookie Betts and seeing what he was doing, how entertaining he was, it just shake your head and you say, this guy should have been playing in New York if only the ownership wasn't the way they were. It starts at the top with all of our teams here, doesn't it? It always does. Our problems with the Jets start with what? Christopher Johnson, Woody Johnson, and the way they feel like the structure should be with their franchise. And it just hasn't worked. And they've got more problems now with the Jets as well. The problems have been all over the place. The Knicks have had their issues at the top as well. Constantly turning it over. Constantly changing. Putting your faith and trust into the wrong people. Changing the plan all the time. You know, yet on the Rangers side of things, it's not an issue.
Easy peasy.
So it's the most bizarre thing ever when you think about it. It's the same owner, yet two different outcomes, two different approaches. You're seeing it everywhere. You can argue with the Giants.
And it's always amazing how, like, it's like, okay, we're going to do something different. Like, it's a reason why most successful organizations have a chain of command, and they just want to buck the system and say, no, we're going to do it like this.
Oh, God, we're smarter than you?
Yes, I hate that. And that's what it feels like.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, I mean, you know, the late, great Charles Wong, who bought the Islanders and saved that franchise. So this is not to disparage Charles, but it was early on in his ownership, and he was very defiant in the beginning. He was like just that attitude you're talking about, Bart, where he felt like he was compelled to almost prove himself because he knew he was such an outsider. He knew he looked different. He had a different background. And here he was stepping into the NHL at a time where you didn't see someone like him with his background. Right? I mean, an Asian billionaire buying an NHL team. Back then, in 2000, that was not typical in the NHL, right? So he knew it. He knew he was an outsider. And his thing about some of the ideas he had, which when he brought them up, you're like, I don't know if that's really the best way to do it, right? But he's like, when people say I can't do it, I say to them, watch me.
Double down.
That helped you make billions in business. And he's a very smart guy. But he learned quickly in sports.
Yeah.
That's not quite the way to do it.
Get the baseball guys around me.
There's too many guys that absolutely do that, though, that they all, I can't? Watch me do it. Oh, God, here we go. Like, that's what you feel like happens with a lot of these owners. Just to answer the question, Bart, that you had asked about payrolls. Because of the 60-game season, every payroll you look for is going to be prorated to 60-game season. So it's like when people say, oh, the Rays are here in the World Series with a $28 million payroll, that's not actually accurate. It's just the payroll because it's based on the 60-game season. The reality is, obviously, it's much higher. So the Yankees, during spring training, were upwards of, and this is Fangraphs has this, so they don't give you the actual total, but they were approaching $250 million in payroll for this season. The Dodgers, slightly below them, I think like 230 range, it looks like. They don't give you a number, like I said, it's just a graph. The Mets, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8th in payroll, equal with the Phillies, the Nationals, and the Cubs, and slightly ahead of the Angels. And the Mets are more, they're under $200 million you know, like the maybe like a 175-ish kind of range, 180 range.
There were?
So you're looking at a pretty almost like $60 million, $70 million difference between the Mets and the Yankees.
I'm about to say it's like you talk about the Mets, like oh they spend good money, they decent, they not the highest.
No, they're top 10. They spent top 10.
But it's like they spend their money on like a kitted out Camry. Like oh we got a new limited Camry coming out with leather down the middle.
We
you know what
like
I'm saying?
Toyota.
It's not what they buy, it's how they buy it. You know what I mean? It's like when Audi decided to go into the supercars. Like at the end of the day, bro, you're Audi. I'm not about to spend Ferrari money price for an Audi, and they be spending like Ferrari money for Audis, right? And I'm top, so tired of looking up, okay, we got Jed Lowry. They got LeMayu. It's not, come on, man. It makes your head hurt.
The Jed Lowry thing was definitely a foobar.
Okay, we got Diaz.
But you see,
they got Britton. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's just a constant reminder. You don't understand it, Alan, because you're a Yankees fan, and you always pick the right person.
Oh, don't give me that crap. I absolutely understand it.
But I'm saying you're always on the other side of it. You got nobody to vent about. You had Ellsbury. We can't find him.
Kobe Ellsbury.
That's about it.
He didn't do anything, but it didn't matter.
But he was so good, it didn't matter.
Ellsbury didn't play, and it was like, whatever. It just doesn't matter. Now,
meanwhile, Cespedes is falling. If there was a cap, in a bore.
If there was a cap, Ellsbury would be like, what Joakim Noah was for the Knicks, where all of a sudden it's like, we can't do anything with this guy. And now we got to pay him to go away. And now that's on our cap for the next freaking 5 years. The gift just keeps on giving. Oh, my God. All right. Yeah, we got Blitz or Prevent to get to, so let's do it now.
This is Blitz or Prevent.
Why does this show go by so freaking fast? Like, we can't even, like, breathe the same. I wanted to give Spike a shout out because of all the singers we were talking about with
it's
amazing, beautiful voices.
Yeah.
He says Karen Carpenter, which... If you don't know the Carpenters, it's from the 70s.
I don't.
You know, we've only just begun.
Oh, okay,
right?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Listen to her. Her voice is it's almost impeccable.
Mm.
She had an amazing voice. Anyways, let's get into Blitz and Prevent. So, speaking of the World Series, speaking of baseball, you noticed as Kershaw pitched amazing, there was no decisions for Dave Roberts to make.
Yeah.
You go with your stud, and he was a stud. The Rays had arguably their best pitcher on the mound, Tyler Glass, now. He battled. Let's put it this way. He battled.
He was trying to pitch too hard, man.
Okay. So he gave up six runs with six walks, but four of the six runs came in the fifth inning. He threw a career-high 112 pitches, and you're thinking, Kevin Cash, like, you know with Glass now there's a bit of a shelf life, and you got the analytics tell you to move on, and Cash didn't. He stuck with his ace. Here we're back to this conversation again. Dusty Baker said he looked in the eyes of Zach Greinke, left him in the game. We've seen this decision. Robert said it about Kershaw in the NLCS as well. I saw him. I trust him with my gut. We're seeing this more and more. Kevin Cash said, just trust that he had plenty of stuff to keep us right there. The walks are definitely not ideal, but we didn't do a good job holding the runners on. We can't allow a double steal right there. As you remember, that play was a turning point. So, Bart, Blitz or Prevent? There's no question analytics get you through the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
But as we're seeing this year, managers prefer to go with baseball instincts, the gut, on some major decisions in the playoffs, and I'm all for it.
But you look at it, for a lot of it, though, it's a lot of old school guys, you know what I mean, that believe in the way that it was done, and they're using the analytics to help in their decision, but it's not the determining factor in their decision. And listen,
then why did the Yankees not keep Cole in the game instead of trying to stretch out Britton and Chapman?
Well, you notice I didn't say Booney.
Uh-huh.
Booney's a new manager. He's not a guy that's managed for years.
Well, Cash and Booney are kind of from the same.
Yeah,
school.
That's true. That's true. But you know, the Geek Squad over there, you get more leeway over there. Like when Cashman says something to you, it's different from somebody from a Rays organization.
I just feel like the Yankees got to back off this stuff. They got to back off it. Maybe in the regular season it works, but in the postseason you got to let your manager manage. Cashman says he does. He says Booney's the guy during the game. We don't tell him what to do, but you too much on the numbers. All right, moving on. So Washington football team president Jason Wright told a radio station down in D.C. Yesterday, there's a good chance they will not have a new nickname for next season because there's just so many hurdles that need to be cleared. So we can expect Washington to remain a team known as football team for at least another year. So here's the Blitz of Prevent for you. Do we really need nicknames anyway? Some of the most iconic soccer teams in Europe don't have nicknames. They just use the city. Do we really need a nickname? What do you think?
I'm going to blitz that, and I'm going to take that. Hell yeah, we need nicknames, man. We got more swag than those other countries, man. Nicknames is a part of American fabric. This is America. We have nicknames. We have like things like the Syracuse Orange. We don't know what it is, but it sounds cool.
They stormed Normandy.
But there aren't any damn lakes in L.A.
But the lakes,
Utah.
See, but if you do your research, and people do the research, they go back. It goes back when they were part of Minneapolis Lakers, and they left. They left in the middle of the night, like the Baltimore Ravens, who used to be the Cleveland Browns. So they kept the name. That's why they called the Lakers. They should be the Los Angeles Ocean.
Surf.
Or the Los Angeles Burns.
I know you were trying. You were trying there. You were trying for
I was
something.
Reaching, I was reaching. I was reaching.
I mean, there's a you we can do a whole spot on nicknames and just how pathetic nicknames
just
are.
It.
In sports, let's be reality. Come on. Really think about it for a minute.
49ers.
Does a nickname really freaking matter? Right. Does it matter? I think it's cooler to say Green Bay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Certain ones are
Dallas,
better to
that's
say.
That's cool.
Some are better than that. But New York, you can't say New York without the Jets.
It ain't New York. The football teams, one is East Rutherford, the other one's Florham Park.
Ooh, so should we
Florham
hold...
Florham Park football
So I guess should we hold organizations accountable to not steal the names and steal cities, right? Mm-hmm. Like, for years, the Pistons were the Detroit Pistons, but they were in
Auburn Hills.
Mm-hmm. So let's force teams that have to claim their real place.
Now you're feeling me. Mm. If you're representing the city, be in the damn city.
So really, this is great. This is great for New York fans because we got the New York Buffalo Bills. So we got a winner.
Yes. And I got my quarterback. That's the guy I always wanted.
Y'all can keep those East Rutherford Giants.
The Western New York football team. Oh, all right, last but not least, and we'll make this quick, I promise. So the Patriots slipped under 500 for the first time this deep into the season since 2002. We mentioned that already. Cam Newton, on his weekly spot on EEI, said there's no need to press the panic button, no need to start reinventing the wheel. We have all the answers we need in that locker room. So the Patriots lost to the Broncos 18-12 at home, and that was a bit of a surprise. But remember, they had just two practices over a two-week span because of the COVID-19 test positives that they had. So Cam pointed that out and just said there are some things that are going on, but there's no excuses. So blitz or prevent, Bart. And I heard you talk about this on KJZ this morning, which is why I brought it up.
Yeah.
Why does Cam have to explain this?
Because
the Pats always start slow. And as we just mentioned, they've gone through a lot of transition and haven't had a lot of practice.
What about we're on the Buffalo, we're on the Cincinnati? Like, we've heard those statements been made in the Patriots organization, but it's only because Cam Newton is a loquacious young man that's braggadocious. He's not one of these quiet, meek guys. He's a guy that's a big personality. So people can't wait. They already have those built-in, reasons why they hate him. And then Bill Belichick said, man, he's the hardest worker. He's here first. He's going last. And all they see is the hair, the wild outfits, and him dancing. And they can't wait to criticize this young man and not really judging him on his merits and how he goes about his business outside of what the narrative has been before they got here. Bill Belichick ain't going to lie for nobody. So if he tells you this guy's one of the hardest workers he's ever been around, hell, you should give him the benefit of the doubt. And I thought he sounded like a damn leader saying all the right things.
That.
We're not going to panic. Why would we panic? We one game behind our division. We only one game under 500. And we had a team that had COVID. Hell, I had COVID. And I couldn't even breathe. And I'm sitting up here trying to run and come back for you guys. And I took a pay cut. So what the hell are you talking about? Y'all better show some damn respect.
I like that take. I think the Patriots in December, it'll be a completely different conversation. Steve Cohen now has to go all the different layers before he gets officially approved as owner. The ownership committee approved him, a vote of 7-1 of the 8. Now another 8 owner committee, the executive committee, now has to approve. And then after that, it's the full ownership group. I mean, they really make you go through hoops here. I mean, do you need all these different committees first?
I got billions. Why you just don't take my money, man? Who else you going to get it from? Who else got $2 billion? Who else got it?
Exactly. Do you see how much he's worth? It's amazing. I saw the tweets, too, and I looked it up. The Reinsdorf thing's a very interesting connection, too, that he doesn't really like Cohen, doesn't want him to be part of this thing. But, Jerry, I'm sorry.
But this is a crazy thing, right?
It's like
Cohen showing up, and he's writing one check. It's like if A-Rod come, he'd be like, all right, man, hold on. I want to put some on this credit card. I want to put some on this one. Man, this dude paying it out straight cash, homie. Ain't no financing.
Oh, man. All right. We'll get to the calls in a minute, but I do want to touch on something NBA-wise that I know is triggering a lot of people because, you know, we've been talking about it, and you won't get to – so the draft is still not a couple of weeks away in November, and then once the draft happens
– I can't wait to hear you break the draft.
You start getting into – I've been watching film. I had the baseball game on in the background watching film, watching Kyra Lewis, by the way, this kid from Alabama. It's a nice player.
It's like watching you is like watching Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind and stuff. You know what I'm saying? Some genius in there. You know what I'm saying?
I see things that other people don't see.
Charlie Babbitt's my brother.
I see bad shooting form. no, but Kyrie's actually a nice player. I just wonder. We'll worry about that another time. This is a bigger story, though. So this came out yesterday. And I've been hearing about this as we talked about Russell Westbrook. Because once Daryl Morey left Houston.
Yeah.
The initial reaction was, all right, Tillman Fertitta, the owner there, they've lost tons of money. Everybody in the league's lost a lot of money. And maybe they're just going to go through a reset. You know, why would Daryl leave? Well, maybe he's thinking, all right, they're not going to spend, you know, the money or whatever it is, right? So the point is this. You have a situation where immediately a superstar like Russell Westbrook could be available. And I've always said, if you're the Knicks, you look at everything because you lack talent. You need talent. So Tillman Fertitta, the owner of the Rockets, was on CNBC, and he was asked directly about, all right, what happens now next for your franchise? Are you going to blow this whole thing up?
Anytime you have players like that, Eric, PJ, James, and Russell, there's no reason to blow up your roster. And this is still our window. The next couple of years, James and Russell are in their early 30s, and we're not blowing up anything. And we plan on contending.
I just want him to say punch COVID in the face because he just has that voice.
Can you get Joel Embiid?
No, they're not. No, they don't want bigs. They're playing super small.
See, but he's
now,
a different type of
who
big.
They hire as coach is going to be interesting, of course.
Yeah.
But him saying that they're not blowing it up, that him naming Russ and how he feels like you keep this group together, and you know that Harden and Russell Westbrook are friends. They are close. Even though on the court, like it's oil and water. It just doesn't work.
Because he can't shoot.
But it doesn't mean that you can't make it work.
I just want to
give
it chance,
more time.
Man.
Remember, they didn't really have a full season. Then they went into the bubble, and they really weren't ready. Like you could make all the excuses you want, and maybe they need a different coach. We'll see. But I don't care about that because it's the Rockets and they don't affect me. What affects me is it's another player that I know a lot of Knicks fans out there were like, you can't make a trade for him. You don't even know what you'd have to give up for him. You have no idea. You might be able to get him if they were looking to dump that salary for pennies on the dollar. You have no idea. Give up a player, a young player that you're not going to be using anyway going forward.
Julius
Give
Randall.
Up a draft pick that's like 27th that you're not going to use anyway. Like, and you get a guy in here that changes your culture immediately, and you have a top 10 player on your roster. Even though it's a huge contract, what are you going to do with that cap space anyway? But still, him saying this now, the Knicks are out of that game. You can't even discuss it now. They're not blowing it up. Westbrook off the table. We don't talk about it anymore. But Bart, what was the other option for the Knicks if they want to help advance the cause?
CP3Z, and that would have brought Carmelo Anthony.
Chris Paul, who obviously has a relationship with Leon Rose, CAA. And always, by the way, connect that dots. You look for players and you see who's got the CAA background, and that's usually how it works.
Devin Booker,
Chris Paul. Chris Paul was also a player that you think if the Thunder want to, you know, do the same thing, move on from a salary, change things up. Remember, they also had a coach leave in Billy Donovan. He left. And so maybe they're looking to hit the reset button, right? Gallo is going to be a free agent, so he won't be there either. And so would they look to trade Chris Paul? And it's like, well, now the Knicks have to get involved in that. Well, guess what I'm hearing? I'm hearing Chris Paul would prefer, and it makes total sense, would prefer a move back to L.A. Now, the Lakers probably don't have anything to offer the Thunder to make that happen. But he'd love to play with LeBron because they're very close. But the Clippers are still an option for him to go home to because Steve Ballmer, the owner, loves him.
Yeah.
And Doc Rivers is no longer there.
And they need an alpha.
And Kawhi Leonard has been telling everybody that as much as they like Patrick Beverley because of his toughness and his defense, that's not the kind of guard they need.
Yeah.
They need somebody that can organize.
Yeah,
they need an alpha leader. They need somebody because that team, Paul George not a leader. Kawhi's not a leader, does his own thing.
Yeah.
They need somebody that sort of is that galvanizer.
Was it Patrick Beverly that was coming out with the reports that they didn't like the preferential treatment?
Yeah, I don't know if that was P-Bev, but some people might be nodding that way.
He's Kawhi. This dude's on a load management. He got a degenerative knee.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yo, yeah.
Yeah.
Not everybody's treated the same, bro.
So,
newsflash.
With that in mind, Bart, I'm led to believe that the any thought of the Knicks trading for Chris Paul is out the window, mainly because, think about it, we always looked at it from a Knicks perspective. Oh, it makes sense. Give up something. Give up this. You get a guy that can be a leader and help your young players. But now that I look at it, now that I understand a little bit better and what I've been told, his family, by the way, some people know this, some people don't, while he was in Oklahoma City and also Houston, his family stayed in L.A.
Mm.
You know, he's got his son. He's got his family. They stayed in L.A. He didn't want to disrupt them. And the Thunder, for one, would let him regularly fly home and spend time at home when they had a break between games and stuff. They would always let him just go. They gave him that freedom. You know, obviously Oklahoma City to L.A. is not that terrible of a flight. But so, asking him to come to New York, would he move his whole family to New York for basically what's left on his contract is 2 years? I'm not sure, from what I understand, that that's something Chris Paul is motivated to do, especially knowing that the Knicks are not going to be a contender for 2 years. If it's an option to go to L.A. and play for either the Clippers or the Lakers, be home, and two teams that are contending, that is far more appealing to him. And therefore, if you're the Thunder, you won't send him where he doesn't want to go. And if I'm and Leon knows him well, obviously, you're not trading for him if he's going to be miserable.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to go there, guys. All right, well, then we're not going to trade for you.
But he might.
So that option's off the table.
Yeah.
So guess what now is left for the Knicks to do? And don't tell me Victor Oladipo. They're not in a place for a guy like him.
Matt Singer.
Yeah. They're not in a place for a guy like Victor Oladipo.
That's funny.
So this leads me to believe. That's my point. Now we can start going down the list of somebody, anybody. No.
Van Fleet?
Bart, I believe the Knicks will have a very quiet offseason. It's going to be a very uncertain, very long offseason. We don't know when they're going to play. They might not play till March. And with that in mind, because there's a lot of uncertainty for next season, the Knicks lost the second most amount of money off last year because they didn't finish the season. So they lost a ton of money. That I have a strange feeling that you will not see a lot of activity with this roster, that they will almost wait through one more year,
man,
and then go into 21 with a ton of cap space, another high pick, and then maybe make their move then.
Let's get Giannis. Now we're gonna hear. Now we gotta listen to that. If Giannis don't sign an extension, now we gotta listen to that.
Well, it's not just Giannis. There's a lot of other big names that are going to be on the market.
Yeah, this is gonna be a bad year for free agents. It's not gonna be a lot.
So this offseason, and I'm telling you, I don't think a lot of teams are going to spend money. Now, one more thing, and then we'll get to calls. Another name that fans keep throwing at me that rumors are always brought up with as well is, well, Fred VanVleet is a free agent, and the Knicks should go all in on Fred VanVleet. He's 26-year-old. He was an undrafted free agent.
And you're going to spend top
dollar. He became a star in Toronto. Kyle Lowry is 35. Masai Ujiri has already said that he is that Fred VanVleet is high priority for them. High priority. You think that he's going to pass on a deal to stay in Toronto where he is already a star and beloved to come to a rebuild in New York?
You got a championship, though. Sometimes when you got a championship, it's more about lifestyle.
You'd have to know the kid. He's not about that. He's a different kind of guy. This is not somebody that's looking for stardom and fame and fortune and all. I think he's looking for what's best for him and his family, and Toronto's what's best for him and his family.
Well, what's best for his family is going to be not to have to pay that Canadian tax, because it's killer. That's why Bosch and Vince Carter was like, get me the hell up out of here, man.
Maybe.
They take 50 off the rip before they even take the rest of the taxes. I'm like, oh, hell no.
All right, let's go some rapid-fire calls here, 800-919-3776. I just emptied my notebook for you on the Knicks stuff, the latest stuff that I've heard about what's going on with them. And I'm telling you right now, Russ Westbrook, some of you hated it, some of you thought it was great. Just the idea of just kicking tires on it, that's off the table. Chris Paul, that might be off the table too. After those two names, there's not a lot that you could do trade-wise that would be impactful for this team, at least not right now, until maybe another player says, I want out of here. Donovan Mitchell. Maybe somebody else says, I want out of my situation. Come trade for me right now, Donovan Mitchell. So we'll see. But right now, this could be a very, very quiet offseason for the Knicks. All right, let's take some calls, Bart.
Let's do that. Man, let's take Dante. We got a nice little buffet, too.
Yeah, Dante in Queens. Right, we're going around the world of sports. Go ahead, Dante.
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for accepting my call. As regards to the Knicks and CP3, the thing about it, I know he's a future Hall of Famer, but that's actually good news because as many Knicks fans who would want him here, you'll be sick to your stomach paying him $40 million plus a year to be sitting on the bench in a suit. Second, as far as free agency and trades go, the Knicks, this forces them to develop their own players. Develop your own stars so you don't have to overpay for other people's stars.
And they just brought in two coaches. Dante, they just brought in two coaches, and that's their specialty. You know, there's two coaches they brought in. That's absolutely their specialty. And so that, I think they're going to have to focus on it.
Right?
Yeah, the kid from obviously the guy from I think it's is it Johnny Bryant? I got to get the name right. Johnny Bryant and Kenny Payne from Kentucky. Like that's their expertise. Look, you've got it. You've got some assets that are just Frank and Kevin. Like there's certain players on this team that you drafted extremely high that have zero value right now. You've got to make them better. So whether they become part of your future or you're going to trade them, one way or another, you got to make them better. Dante, thanks for the call. Like I think you're right. They're going to be forced to deal with what they have in-house and make the most of it. Let's take let's take Joe in Holmdel. Joe.
Hey, guys. Hey, Alan. Hey, Bart. Guys, just a quick thought. I think the NFL should change their draft format a little bit. I think they should move more towards like what the NBA does. I don't think you should reward these teams for finishing. Well, I'll tell you why, Bart.
I don't think he's wrong, Bart. I don't think Joe's wrong at all.
I'll tell you why. It creates there's just too many bad teams towards the end of the year, and they just quit playing. And Bart, you know this. I've heard it before. Players, you go 0-5, 0-6. Then you got 10 more games left. You're cashing it in.
Ship the cars home.
And exactly. So I think just from a, forget sportsmanship. These guys are getting paid, but they're not going to play hard because they get hurt, and I get it. But there should be no guarantee that you're fighting for the number one pick. In fact, I think it's dangerous as a franchise. I've been a Jet fan my whole life, and I was alive for their first Super Bowl. So this team perpetually underachieves, and then we're talking about this team almost every year, it seems, after week 5 or 6, about, are we going to get the number one pick, right? There's no guarantee that number one pick does anything anyway, right? Russell Wilson was third round.
But it gives you a better chance.
I'm with Joe, though. I do think what happened, and I don't like, and thanks for the call, Joe. You know what else I don't like, though, about this part? Is that when you have a draft like this where there's a guy at the very top and everybody wants him, December turns into games that are important to some teams, and you're playing a garbage team. That is basically they don't want to win.
That's in basketball too. When they
it's not good for basketball.
When they low manage, but I'd much rather have the NFL system than have the NBA system because this is a quicker way for a bad organization to change it. Do you not think that Cincinnati Bengals are in better position now? The fact that they got Joe Burrow and he looks like a real player, opposed if Joe Burrow would have went to Indianapolis and the Indianapolis just continues to be a good team that always has the best a great transition quarterback.
Again, it forces you. I've always said this about the I feel like the draft itself, the idea of a lottery is antiquated. I do think there's got to be you have to treat your draft like it's free agency, where everybody gets the same amount of money to spend, and you can spend it any way you want. You can spend it on one player, two players, whatever it is. That, I really feel like that's how it should be, and you then have to present yourself as a franchise that is attractive instead of forcing guys to go to certain places where they shouldn't go because they'll be miserable. Maybe they'll never develop. See, Josh Rosen is a great example of somebody that he should have never gone to Arizona. But what a terrible place for him to go.
But it would have been.
They gave up on him in a year, and now he's bouncing around. Like there's certain players.
Change of leadership, though. If they could have won with him if they never won. I thought he actually had a decent first year. I thought he was right on path if they would have just stayed the course. But because the ownership had an infatuation with Kingsbury, that's what changed the course of what they did. I think.
But maybe he would have seen that in his interview with Arizona and said, I don't know if I think there's not a lot of stability here. I want to go where the system's better for me. I could learn.
So,
I think.
So,
out of young players.
So now we about to start allowing these players to pick, which they don't even know, because you don't know how long that the coaches are even going to be around. You know, I mean, I just believe that, you know, the system is not perfect, but no system is. But I think it's the best way, because that's why I believe the NFL has the greatest parity in the league, right? We talk about, okay, we can always say New England's going to
be
there.
Cap
we can
does
say
that.
We can say the Saints are going to be there. No, people spill bad money on caps too. People buy bad players. Just look at the Jets. I hate to have to use them as another example. Le'Veon Bell, think about what they did with bringing in Henry Anderson. You know, it's a lot of bad money that was spent there too. So it's not just like just because people, you know, have money don't give them the great ability to be a great decision maker. I just think that it's the best way because it's the quickest way. Just think about all the bad franchises that aren't bad anymore. We talk about the first overall pick, right? The thing is, if you really want it enough and you have so much conviction in this player, you got enough trade packages to be able to get the player if you want. So I think, you know, if you really believe in a player and you're willing to give up 2 first-round draft picks, like if Jacksonville really believes in Trevor Lawrence.
I just feel
so
like
you can, it could be a weapon too.
Bart, I get what you're saying. I hate rewarding failure. And that's what the draft does. It used to be the draft protects the weaker teams, helps them get talent.
And the smaller market teams,
but it's,
too.
Nah. It's become your reward bad management. That's what you do. Save me. I can't figure it out. I want to read a tweet for you, though, Bart. You ready for this? So before Mets, is it B? Yeah, it's B4. Before Mets _ Yankees says, why do we need nicknames? Because it's fun. And this is America. He said, I propose the Washington NFL, the Washington team, should be the team formerly known as the Redskins. So I don't think the whole idea was
little Prince action right there. Little Prince action right there.
Yeah, he put up the symbol also, the Prince symbol with the Redskins logo in there. So clearly he's put this together. But I mean, the whole idea was to keep Redskins out of it. Right, that's the whole idea, is to no longer reference that. So I just feel like the nickname thing is like we overthink that. I mean, Seattle Kraken is the new NHL team, and that sounds cool because it's Kraken, and it's just fun to say Kraken. You know, and there's all kinds of stuff they can do there in Seattle. Release the Kraken, and they all come out, you know, that kind of thing. But in the end, I mean, does it really matter?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Especially, like, it's worse.
Like, Minnesota Twins. What the hell is that? I know, Twin City. You don't have to explain it to me. I know what it means, right? It's Minneapolis, St. Paul. I get it. Twin Cities. But you know, just... Twins? Like, that's what we're going with the Twins. There's nothing tough about that.
You know,
who are we playing today? We're playing the Twins.
You know what I wish? I wish we can make their nicknames things that they inspire to be.
Uh-oh.
You know what I'm saying? Like the Mets winners. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
That's funny.
You can never, that can't be the nickname.
That way, if they don't live up to it, you get teased with it.
Like the one thing in European soccer is that the fans have nicknames for their teams. You know what I mean? Like they just have their own, it's sort of like the term of endearment for their team. So you call them something. I mean, I just think, you know, the Brooklyn Dodgers with Dem Bums forever. So it'd be hilarious if it was just like Brooklyn baseball team and like their fans just called them Dem Bums.
Dem Bums.
And it just, and when they were great, you'd still say it because it would be funnier. It'd be ironic.
Yeah, how about Dem Bums now?
Dem Bums, baby. Like, right? That's what it's like. What is it? Is it New Orleans? They say who dat, right?
Yeah.
Do you need to be the Saints? Just who dat?
You know, one thing I never understood, I don't understand the history.
Do we really need nicknames? Come on, be honest.
Because
we don't need nicknames.
They got the who dat, and then the Bengals use that who dat. So I'm like, who owns who dat?
Good question.
I don't get it.
Who did the song who dat? Was that J. Cole? Somebody did a song called who dat.
I don't know.
But I don't think it had anything to do with New Orleans. Anyways.
Yeah, that's who they said they're going to get.
Let me take Dennis in Huntington real quick.
Who that is?
Dennis.
What's going on, guys? If we're talking about nicknames, I got one for the Washington team. The Washington Dumpsters. And their logo would just be a dumpster on fire on their helmet. I think
people
that's
would say
great,
that about the,
great.
People would say the Jets could be that too, though. That's the problem.
Well, let's not let the Giants off the hook, man. They got one win, and they, like, understand they won game out of first place. But come on, man.
here's the crazy thing to do. I've told the story many times. Before the Jets were called the Jets, right? Leon Hess did all that stuff. They were the Titans.
Yeah.
Do you know why they chose Titans as the nickname?
No.
Because in mythology, Titans killed giants.
Ah, man, that's some
talk
envy.
About the ultimate little brother syndrome thing.
That's some envy.
I mean, it's you started out that way. You were born into it. You know what I'm saying? All right, we'll get back to calls, but let's go with audio files.
The audio file.
All right, let's see. We begin with, we mentioned this again, Mike McCarthy under fire, or the coaching staff really in Dallas under fire from players, anonymous players, of course, speaking out, saying that there's no teaching going on, coaches aren't prepared, they're not able to change the game plan, all that stuff. A lot of criticism happening with the 2-4 Dallas Cowboys, Mike McCarthy in his first year. Here's McCarthy responding to anonymous players.
And I just really go back to my first meeting with the football team. I've always stated this to every team that I've coached. I think it's important to handle things as men. I mean, if you do have something to say publicly that is of, you know, of most importance, I think it's important to say it to the individual, particularly in a group dynamic setting, and especially in a game of football, especially for the Dallas Cowboys.
That's what you said, right?
Yeah, you got something to say. Be a man about it. That just lets you know it's an indication that you got a lot of people hiding behind their reporter friends that they dump stories to, so when they play bad, they can try and keep them in town because they won't write bad stories about them.
That's a bad situation happening down there right now. The offense, though, was...
They're still in first place.
Best in the league. Yeah, right.
That's the thing. They're still in first place, and they're panicking
tomorrow,
now.
We'll talk more about tomorrow, but how big is tomorrow's game for the Eagles? Eagles-Giants Thursday night. It's a huge game for the Eagles.
I think the Eagles are the best team in the division.
I agree.
Football
Power Index says that they have the best chance percentage-wise to win the division.
To win six games
would win the division.
Man, six games, man. There's no way I'm showing up as the visiting team.
Ooh,
listen, you won a division. You won a division. Bring your ass down here. We ain't getting on the airplane.
We are not going to your building when you won the damn six games. And we got to do what the Saints did with Seattle 10 years ago. All right, next up. Didn't get your take on this. This happened yesterday during the show that the Miami Dolphins decided to go with Tua Tagovailoa now as their quarterback for the rest of the season coming out of the bye. They figure this is the right time, and Brian Flores explained.
We just feel like, this was the best move for our team right now. And Fitz has done a great job. He's been productive. His leadership's been great. It's not an easy decision, for me or us as an organization, but we felt like, for the team now, moving forward, this is the move we needed to make.
You agree with that? That this is the time do this at 3-3, though, in a division that is sort of there right now for the taking, and they have played well.
Yeah, and the Jets were more like the 7-9 team that they showed last year than what they were this year.
Okay.
Like, come on, man. It's fool's gold, right? You talk about Ryan Fitzpatrick, what he is. You know what Ryan Fitzpatrick is. He's a placeholder, and it's time for the young man to come take his place. We watching Herbert. We watching, Burrow do their thing, not trying to see what we got, because we thought that we got the best one, because if it wasn't for the injury, he would have been picked number one overall, not Joe Burrow. So let's just say, like, you want to talk about Fitzmagic or Fitztragic. You know that train's never late. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. How did he look against the Patriots? Oh,
yeah, it shows up.
Salad. How did he look against Buffalo? Not great. How did he? Okay. He shined against Jacksonville. Well, congratulations. Got his ass kicked against the Seattle Seahawks. Okay, go down there and you go to San Francisco and you beat Jimmy G, who couldn't hit the side of a barn last week. Okay, and then you beat the Jets. You think that's a strong, powerful 3-3? No, it's time to get the young guy in there, because guess what? This is a 5-year plan. We're in year two. We already stripped the roster down. We brought in players that which I can trust. He brought in Van Noy, all the players that he thought that he needed to be, his allies in the locker room. Now it's time to take this kid and get him some experience, so then next year we can try and be a playoff team. But if we stick with Fitzmagic or Fitztragic, then you're just stunning the growth of the kid, which is holding the franchise back by 8 games. We know we're not going anywhere. We know we're not legitimate. We know this record is a fluffed up record, and we know that the cream is going to rise to the top in the middle of November. And we know when the cream rises to the top, they ain't going to be there. Because guess what? This opportunity to get the young kid to go able to play Denver, the Chargers, another young rookie quarterback, the Rams, yeah, but I'm talking about the sorry teams that they're going to play. They're going to play the Jets
are in that,
and they're going to play Cincinnati. But at the end of that, now you want to see if this kid is battle tested, because now he can get experience for those 4 games, and then ending up the season, he got to see Kansas City, he got to see New England, he got to see the Raiders, and he got to see Buffalo. Yeah. That's when you get a little grit. This when the book is out on them, and people have 5 games to break down, and they start learning your tendencies. injuries, and he's going to learn about what he has to work on in the next season. But he's going to be hungry because he's going to have some success, and then they're going to figure him out. He's going to struggle, and it's going to make him hungry. You're going to see what this kid is made out of, and then you can make your move next year.
Yeah, I think it's exactly the right thing to do. You get him. He didn't have a preseason, so you get him those first couple of weeks as the backup, learning how to prepare for a game, watching a veteran like Ryan Fitzpatrick prepare.
It's been 1 year to the day, Alan, since when he got hurt.
Yeah, understand. Well, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point, too. It gave him the full year. All right, up next here. This was a headline that we all like got caught. An NFL star is advising Trevor Lawrence to stay away from the Jets. That NFL star, Bart, turned out to be Roddy White, and this is from The Big Lead.
If the Jets get the first pick, don't go. Just stay. Just stay 1 year in college and just enjoy your time, man. Just enjoy your time in college, because it would be awful for you to get drafted by the Jets, because they do not know how to put anything together over there as far as quarterbacking, as far as weapons around the quarterback, as far as anything that has to do with offensive thing, talent. They can draft defensively, and they do a hell of a job on that side of the ball. As far as offense, man, that team is just bad at picking players.
Okay, so a couple of things. First, Roddy White, NFL star, or ex-NFL star, question mark. And the other thing is that he's not the headline. He's not quite advising him. He's offering his advice.
Right.
Your thoughts on this advice?
Well, it's a clickbait. First of all, let's take your organization. Will you be better off going to your organization? You ain't win nothing either. Last I checked, you're having just a disappointing season, if not a bigger disappointing season as the Jets. Secondly, how do you know? At what point does that change? Because I remember where going to New Orleans wasn't a great place to go, but they found a head coach. And if you believe in Joe Douglas, then or you talk to people and you believe in Joe Douglas, then you absolutely do that. It's figuring out that he's gonna get it right. He got tons of money. He may get you a brand new coach. How about go back and end up like Tua and get injured and then get hurt and then see what happens? And the thing is, you're not built like Tua. You're a much longer, taller player. So a knee injury or a hip injury is gonna be worse on you. You know, because like a knee injury on a giraffe opposed to a gazelle. Gazelle gonna go heal a little better. Trevor Lawrence 6'6". You know what I'm saying? So what are you talking about? So you better go get your money where you can get it. And it's always a privilege to be able to play in this league, no matter what Roddy White want to tell you. You know what I'm saying? Coming here is not the worst place. It's not the kiss of death. They'll figure it out. This is a team that's had some success, not as much success as they were wanting in the last 10 years. But listen, I'm not turning up opportunity to be at a Big Apple and be that dude.
Well, no, that's true. He could be a huge star. I just feel like this. You do want to see who becomes the coach. Because I have to feel
they
like
they got money and draft picks, Alan. They can change.
I know,
it.
But I got to know who the coach is, because again, if I'm Lawrence and I'm his family and I'm looking at what's going on there, I got it. Like, who's the coach?
All right, go to Jacksonville. Go to Jacksonville. Who's going to be the coach there?
Well, Doug Marrone might not be.
Right, him and his baloney sandwich.
Wouldn't it be something
fired
if
too?
Doug Marrone all these years later becomes the Jets coach when he should have been all along? Anyways, moving on. Last thing. Speaking of the Jets, by the way. Take a listen to this. Here's Joe Namath, the greatest of all great Jets quarterbacks, on the Jake Asman show. And he was asked what the Jets should do if they do get the number one pick. And here's Broadway Joe.
I don't know what they're going to do. They could maybe get other draft choices. Do they still believe in Sam? I don't look at the video of the games and replays the way the coaches do. So they'll make that decision. It'd be hard to pass on Lawrence. I tell you, he's just a marvelous player and has been there the last few years. Everything about him is his passing ability, his movement, his habit of winning. He's a monster. Whoever is going to have a chance to get him will probably take him. First of all, if it did end up being our guys, our team, Joe Douglas, who's there now, they'll make that decision, because there's a lot of teams. There's 31 other teams out there, and Sam Darnold can play for several of them. So he may be somewhere else starting if that scenario did unfold.
See, Joe, you lucky they don't have home games. If I'm Sam Darnold, I'm telling my receivers to go deep. And while you're on the sideline waving in the pregame, I'm hitting the chest with the football.
Yeah, but you understand, like,
I understand what he's saying. I'm just,
you know, like,
he's keeping it real.
You, Bart,
he's keeping it real.
Yeah, he is. But Bart, like, honestly, we're acting like this is an easy decision. This is not an easy decision.
It is a franchise-altering decision.
And I still say the first thing I need to know is what's the best I can get for that pick.
Mm.
Because if it's not, if I'm not over.
What if it's RG3? What if it's four picks? What if it's Jacksonville's two number ones, two number twos, a number three, a number four?
It needs to be overwhelming to a point where I know, like, okay, if I get all that in return, I can rebuild this entire roster and we can turn this thing around pretty quickly. Like, this has got to be that Jimmy Johnson, Herschel Walker kind of thing. Like, it's got to be something like that where I now build my dynasty off of the return I got.
Because
if not, it ain't worth it.
You're going to get at least two first-round draft picks, man. That's just
But is that enough?
For agent, the number
is
one
that
overall?
Enough for me to give up a guy that could be a Hall of Fame quarterback who's already proven in college that he's arguably the best at his position and already a champion, a winner? I love Sam, but he didn't win in college. It's not like was he ever in the championship game? Was he ever in the national championship? Was he ever in any of that stuff?
But I think Sam,
this guy has been. He's a winner.
Yeah, I think Sam's floor is Matt Ryan.
Well, it's not terrible.
Right.
Matt Ryan Super Bowl.
I think his ceiling is like Tony Romo or Drew Brees.
Okay.
So
I mean, I'm just saying,
you
like what you have, but yeah, but again, what you say is, what you ask yourself is, with Sam, is he enough if I get like a ton of skill with all this, with the package I get back for the number one pick, if I can get enough talent that Sam is good enough to take that talent and we can win a championship, then it's worth it. But if we feel like Sam still has enough of a flaw in him that we could be a team that maybe even just gets to a Super Bowl but can't win, like again, Matt Ryan.
He's better than Jimmy G.
Like, is that something you think about? So do you then just go for the guy who's the bona fide Hall of Famer and try to build? This is not easy. We talk about it like it is, but it's going to be a very difficult decision if the Jets end up being in that conversation, and we all feel like it will be.
Let's get a little extra money in your pocket.
Cheese and sour cream on the taco.
This is Lunch Money.
All right, tonight we have Game 2 of the World Series. Dodgers, again, a favorite in this one. -135, you want to put your money on them. I'm not going to play that game. I'm not going to play that game, though, boy. I'm looking at this because yesterday's game was 8-3.
Yeah.
I think the over-under was 7.5. I don't know why. I don't know why that popped up in my head. That sounds about right, though. Today's over-under for the game is 8. Am I not mistaken, right? Is it 8? And you've got Gonsolin going tonight, the rookie for the Dodgers. He just pitched in Game 7. You can't imagine they're going to get a ton of innings out of him. Even when they do, I mean, he has had some issues. Although he pitched okay in Game 7, but he has given up runs. And Blake Snell has been okay, but not great. The Yankees smacked him around a little bit.
Morton's been their best pitcher.
Yeah, I think Morton's going to be such a difference maker.
This one's so much more important, though.
The Rays have got to get this game.
Because, remember, this is the last time the Yankees. This is when the Yankees try to get cute, though.
Yeah.
Remember, the Yankees try to get cute like this, right?
Don't bring me back.
So if they go in with a young kid that they plan to get the bullpen in, you're expecting that every pitcher that you bring in is going to be on that day.
Don't bring me back to that place, man. You'll get me.
You just got out.
They gave away a series in Game 2 by getting cute. Anyways, so based on this, I'm taking the over here in runs, because it's going to be a bullpen game. The Dodgers offense yesterday showed you something. I mean, they weren't just all or nothing home run style. They were putting runners on. And the Rays, by the way, had runners on yesterday. They had some activity. They had some action.
That seventh inning, man, where you talk about Pivotal with two on. You know, they look like they were trying to change that momentum.
Yeah.
Hit that line shot with him, turned into a double play. That's when you're living
right. What a play.
That's when you're living right. And I mean, Kershaw, remember how the Braves.
If only the Mets could find a guy like Justin Turner, man, you know?
Yeah, man, that would be a perfect fit for them.
If only they could find Oh, wait, that's, yeah. Never mind.
I've seen that carrot top before.
That's
funny.
All right, so that'll be tonight. So we'll take the over. We'll see how we do on that. Tomorrow we start week seven already in the NFL. And the Thursday night game is the Eagles and the Giants. We'll spend a lot of time breaking that game. This is a huge game. The NFC East is a joke, but that's actually a really big game for Joe Judge, the fighting Joe Judges. See, you don't need to call them the Giants. The New York Football Club, and they are the fighting Joe Judges. And that's what they are. And so we'll spend a lot of time talking about that, and we'll give you a pick on that and maybe even do a daily fantasy tomorrow. But our over tonight is over. The 8 is the over-under. We'll take the over for Rays and Dodgers tonight. Let's get some calls to finish out the show. 800-919-3776. Ira's in Staten Island. Hey, Ira.
Hey, what's happening, Alan? What's happening, Bart? You know, everybody's talking about Trevor Lawrence, and I get it. You know, it's a sexy thing to talk about, and what's going to happen with but the bottom line here is the first thing that has to be done is you got to bring in the right head coach and the right staff and reshuffle the way this organization is set up. Because until that gets done, or if Douglas doesn't make the right hire and brings in another coach that's not going to get this turned around, then it does not going to matter if we draft Trevor Lawrence. Because guess what? This organization will ruin him too.
That's
look how many quarterbacks can come in and out of here. The most important thing, whether we get the number one pick or not, is get a head coach, because a football team can't operate without a head coach, and they have to get the right guy. I don't know who it is. It's a college guy, a coordinator, a position coach, but they have to get somebody who's a leader of men. I don't know exactly what I'm talking about. You get a leader in here, and that's the first step. After that, then you can start talking about quarterback, Sam, Trevor, whatever you're going to do.
Thanks, Ira. I mean, I'm telling you, the coach is going to matter most right out of the gate. It's the very first thing that I think is going to matter. Jose's in Manhattan. Jose.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Hope everybody's healthy and safe. As far as Trevor Lawrence, I think they should be more concerned about how many picks they can get for Sam Darnold.
That'd be none.
None? You think? You don't think he has his trade value
low
right now?
The fact that the Jets are trying to figure out if he's a franchise quarterback, and I mean that answer hasn't been answered yet. And that means that in 2 years, you got to make a decision, you know, one, to pick up his option, but you're going to have to pay him after 5 years because he'll be an unrestricted free agent. So if you're picking him up as a team, you have to be convinced that he's already a franchise quarterback, or you're wasting your time because he's going to have to be paid or franchised in less than 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, Trevor Lawrence is supposedly the sure thing.
Yeah, so
the Jets never seem to pick a sure thing, guys, as you know.
So was DeMarcus Russell and a lot of other guys. We can say that about a lot of people until they put the uniforms on.
Hey, can I read you a quote here before we call it a day?
Yes, sir.
Out of Cleveland, Odell Beckham Jr. doesn't think COVID-19 is going to, quote, enter his body. Why? It's a mutual respect.
Because he got all that.
Bless your heart.
He got all that bleach from his dye in his hair.
Look at
his
face. There.
Odell's trying to be funny and cute here, but
yeah,
that is such an Odell.
Those are usually last words before he.
Odell, you're so Odell. You really are. So, all right, quickly, what do you think of this trade? My friend Brian Reichert has this trade. Ready? You ready for this?
Yep.
The Jets get Calvin Ridley. They get 21 and 22 firsts. And you draft Jamar Chase with Atlanta's pick if Atlanta like is third. Would you do that? You think that's enough?
Calvin Ridley? Calvin Ridley's not enough for me, man.
Don't like that. Sorry, Brian.
He's not as dynamic,
shut down. That's a shame.
The Jets should have took my advice and took Chase Claypool.
All right. Well, we'll have more to talk about tomorrow, including football week 7. Bart, great job. See you tomorrow.
Holla.
Don't miss Bart Scott and Alan Hahn. Weekdays at 11 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN.